the itsy bitsy spider crawled up the water spout. Down came the rain and washed the spider out. Out came the sun and dried up all the rain. And the itsy bitsy spider crawled up the spout again.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's bonus review of Arachnophobia.
It's just a spider. What's a big deal?
A patron-exclusive review chosen by Brett McKinney.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
Hosted by Arnie.
I'd say it's a damn fine suspect.
Stuart.
This is way out of my league.
And Jacob.
Prepare yourselves, gentlemen.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and mildly objectionable language.
What are you, some kind of garbage mouth?
We hope you enjoy the show.
Supper's ready. Come and get it.
Today we're discussing Arachnophobia, starring Jeff Daniels, Julian Sands, Harley Jane Kozak, and John Goodman, directed by Frank Marshall. This is the Now Playing co-host who suffers from ophidiophobia, acrophobia, aerophobia, social phobia, mysophobia, enchilophobia, musophobia, fescophobia, nomophobia, tripophobia, a bit of agoraphobia, algophobia, itichophobia, necrophobia, bathmophobia, catangelophobia, trypanophobia, and yes, a smidge of arachnophobia, Arnie. And after making that list, I also have phobophobia.
Get help. This is Stuart.
Life is exposure therapy.
And this is Jacob. And yeah, that's right. I'm bad.
So welcome back, patrons, to our October show, Halloween. Always good for a horror film. This is a bit of a horror comedy. And hey, Venom coming out, our review on Tuesday, so something with a little bit of spider venom. But this isn't just something we've picked. This is something one of you have picked, Brent, who is here on the call with us. Brent, tell us, why are we here discussing Arachnophobia?
Hi, guys. Good to be on the show. Boy, howdy. Why did I pick this movie? Because I'm almost 40, and I'm just now able to rewatch it.
Really?
This movie did a number on me.
Uh-oh.
So if you're just 40, then you saw it when you were, what, 8?
Yeah, you're about right there. 8, 9 years old, 93, is that right when it came out?
90.
Oh, boy, yeah. So I was about 7 or 8. And I remembered watching this movie. My family put it on. It was a family watch. Brothers, sisters, everybody. And everyone shaked it off but me. I'm the one that went to bed.
So do you have arachnophobia? Do you like spiders?
Well, when I saw the movie, I got arachnophobia, Arnie. Yeah, I didn't know what we were watching.
Have you gotten therapy? Have you treated it?
Yeah.
If a spider jumps on you right now, are you going to scream?
I would scream, yes. I don't like them. Yeah, they messed me up, man. And there were shots in this movie that I think stuck with me as a little kid, like the toilet scene where it crawls behind the toilet. Things like that. It's just like, oh my gosh, I couldn't shake it. And everyone kind of laughed it off. You know, my siblings and my parents, I remember them making comments like, oh, that's a pumped basketball for the egg sac that was, you know, pulsating. And they were just kind of laughing at it. And it was just, to me, I'll never forget, like, okay, now the movie's over. Everyone go to bed.
I can't possibly judge because I'm the host who was frightened by Superman 3 when I was about that same age. So
that's scary, that eye laser.
But when did you come back to the film then?
That's a good question. So I think at that point, whatever, 8 or 9, I don't think I could return to that movie. I liked it. I like Jeff Daniels. I like John Goodman. There are certain things in that movie that are really, I think, pretty great. But the spider stuff was just tough for me to come back to. And I would talk to people about scary movies and I would say Arachnophobia. And they're like, oh, yeah. It didn't seem to have the same effect for people that I would talk about scary movies with. So I was like, I'm in the small crowd here. So.
Mm-hmm. Underrated?
Yeah.
Is this what I'm hearing?
Somewhere around just about 10 years ago, I put it on. I still can't watch this movie. I recently put it on a few times. My girlfriend and I watched it. She had never seen it. Oh, let's watch it. I was in the mood. And I had to still have like a blanket to hide under. here and there. So, I mean, at this point, yeah, maybe in the last 10 years, I started to put it on again.
So this is real. This, like, you are not doing a bit.
I'm serious.
Yeah. And just to be clear, were you afraid of spiders before?
No. I didn't know they were that bad.
Yes. This movie created a fear of spiders.
Oh, yes. And in the movie, it's because of the one bite kill, right? It's just that, oh, you're dead.
Yeah.
And just the way they just, ugh. And that ending. Oh, my gosh.
And that's funny because I live in an area now, and in my specific neighborhood, my Facebook neighborhood group has started posting photos. Black widows are in my neighborhood. And I had a big fear because black widows, oh my God. And then this movie assuaged that fear, saying a single bite from a single spider is killed anybody. I'm like, oh, good. I don't have to worry about these black widows then. So this movie had the opposite effect on me watching it for this review. It actually made me think, oh, okay, so a single bite isn't going to kill me even from a black widow.
Yeah, this brings up, I think, the central question and maybe why this movie, when it came out in theaters in 1990, was what I'd call an also-ran. It wasn't a flop and it wasn't a hit. It sort of came out, did some business, and faded away. And I think it, you had to be at an impressionable age to remember it. I mean, Brent, I'm even hearing you saying you bring it up to people, they don't remember it or it's hazy. They haven't gone back to it. This is not a classic in the same way that, say, Jaws was a classic.
Correct. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah. Jaws made everyone afraid of sharks. Arachnophobia didn't make us all swat webs, right? It didn't happen.
One of us it did, but...
Okay. Yes. Not all of us. Not as a nation, you know?
Stuart, you actually touch upon something that I couple this with Jaws a little bit, because Jaws also messed me up. And now is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, no. Do not watch movies anymore. They all scare you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love them. Jaws was a movie that I saw as an impressionable age. And if I'm in the water, yeah, I might be like, what's going on underneath here?
Mm-hmm.
But when I was a kid, it did scare the living daylights out of me to be immersed in water. And now I've grown to love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies. It's a obviously, it's a classic. Everyone loves it. But Arachnophobia, that's a movie I just couldn't return to. The spider stuff, I just couldn't go back to. It's like, I don't want to see this, man. This could be in my bed.
And look, I could empathize with you. I talked about with Creepshow. That made me scared of cockroaches for a very, very long time. So that is real. But Stuart, you said, like, yeah, this didn't make a whole lot of an impression, at least on the nation as a whole. I do remember seeing this in theaters. We went to this family movie. You know, I was a young teenager and I could probably recount, you know, probably a good 60% of the plot, and like that ending with the spiders all over the house, like that, it didn't make me scared of spiders, but like that was an image I've always remembered, though it's never been strong enough to return to this movie. This is my first time returning to it since theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this in theaters as well back in 1990. I was one of the few, because as Stuart, you mentioned, this thing opened at number 3. Ghost was holding on to the number 1 spot at the box office. Die Hard was number 2. Arachnophobia was number 3. And I saw it after a little bit of cajoling from you, Stuart, because I didn't want to see this film. And the main reason I didn't want to see it is because it had John Goodman featured prominently in the trailers. Roseanne was on at that time, and I never watched Roseanne, but I hated Roseanne. I felt like it was a bad depiction of the American family, and it just offended me that it existed.
Wow. Did you write letters in, like, boycotting the sponsors of the show?
Years later, when it hit syndication, I'd watch Roseanne and realize it was a really funny show.
It's a good show, yeah. At least the first run.
Yeah, I like Roseanne, having watched it, but at the time, I was so anti-John Goodman that I was not going to see this movie.
Because of Roseanne.
Because of Roseanne.
Because of a show I did not watch. I refused to see a movie where a supporting character had a minor part.
And you had told me, Stuart, that this was a comedy as well as a horror film, not a straight horror film. And that was kind of a newer idea to me. Mm-hmm. I realize in retrospect, I'd seen some horror comedies, but mostly I liked my horror straight horror. I hadn't seen things like Night of the Creeps or Return of the Living Dead or any of those intentionally funny horror films. And so this really kind of introduced me to a new genre of film. And I remember walking out of theaters thinking, yeah, I liked it. And I've kind of held that affable, positive feeling towards it ever since without ever thinking I needed to watch the movie again. I don't think I've seen this since theaters.
Yeah, I saw it in theaters in its debut. They actually had it as a preview, and they paired it as a double feature. This is, it should point out, the first Hollywood picture, and which was a division of Disney that failed epically. So much so that it had the catchphrase, if it's the Sphinx, it stinks. You know, like almost everything they put out bombed. And it kind of started with this movie. Again, I wouldn't call it a bomb, but they were saying, you know, Spielberg's name is on this as a producer. Spielberg's longtime producer is directing this. They were aiming for Jaws. And so to make this successful, they had it on a double bill with Pretty Woman. So I watched both movies in the same sitting.
A family film with a movie about a hooker?
Yeah, I ended up having a great big fear of streetwalkers is actually what I ended up having that night.
Uh-oh.
Which I still have to this day.
I'll have to look up what that phobia name is. I may need to add that to my list, too. I think I have that same phobia. But what's funny is those are both Disney films. I mean, Hollywood Pictures is a Disney company.
Yes.
Buena Vista is a Disney company. Pretty Woman, Julia Roberts' prostitute there is a Disney princess.
Yeah, yeah. She had been out. That movie had already done its business. It already made buckle bucks. And so I hadn't seen it. So I was like, well, let's go to Arachnophobia, the movie I want to see, and then we'll stay for this thing. But we treated it as a night of comedy. I definitely saw Arachnophobia through the lens of it being, yeah, kind of Disney, kind of Spielberg. You know, I had arachnophobia as a child. I think most kids are afraid of spiders. There's something unnerving about the eyes and the eight legs and all of that. I treat it as a face. So I could connect to the child in me that was afraid of spiders, but I mostly found the movie's tone to be rather goofy and humorous. And so, yeah, I think I recommended it to you, Arnie, as a light comedy with some spider jump scares.
No offensive portrayals of the family in it.
Yeah.
I will agree with you there, Stuart. I just watched the movie last night to bone up, and it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's parts that are laugh out loud pretty funny. I was like, oh man, these guys are going to rip me apart.
Well, I'm not going to rip anybody apart that's phobic. I mean, like, it would be cruel of us to be like, how dare you be scared of this? But I do think that some of that was you were seven. You were very impressionable. And I suppose that would be the primary audience, I would think, for Arachnophobia. Except, and I think this was working against the movie, what does that title mean? I really think that part of the problem why people didn't go is they didn't know what arachnophobia meant. It was a weird title. The movie didn't have any stars. I looked at the poster and it's just like a spider coming down from a tree with the moon as a backdrop. Kind of makes you think of E.T.
It's a Charlotte's Web sequel.
I actually like that poster.
It's a very pretty airbrushed painting of a poster, too. It doesn't tell me scares. It doesn't tell me comedy. It almost looks like The Secret of Nim.
Right. It you know, it's not a shark swimming up to get a blonde, you know, in the ocean. It doesn't sell that Spielbergian fear factor that tells you be prepared for a Jaws movie. And indeed, it is quite different in tone once we get into it. But I think the aspiration was Hollywood Pictures thought they were going to take the summer with a Jaws clone from Spielberg. And it just ended up being the start of a very long line of limp, not very successful Hollywood Pictures.
Yeah, I remember at the time, I didn't know what arachnophobia was. That was something this movie taught me, is that arachnophobia is fear of spiders. I think every single review I read put that in like the first paragraph.
I even want to say at one point they released the poster in newspaper ads with like the definition as part of it and how to pronounce it.
Webster's defines it as.
Yeah, yeah. And a pronunciation key, because they just, again, you know, sometimes America can go with weird titles.
How do you ask for those tickets? You couldn't buy them online back then. You have to say the word.
And yet I will offer that 10 years later, they released a movie called Eight-Legged Freaks, and that made even less money. So maybe people just don't want to see spiders in a movie. Maybe it scares them too much to see these little eight-legged arachnid creatures getting their moment in the spotlight. Let's find out what they do. Arnie, give them the plot. We'll get into arachnophobia.
Photographer Jerry Manley has gone to Venezuela with noted entomologist James Atherton, played by Warlock's Julian Sands. Jerry is there to photograph Atherton in the field. While spraying for insects, Atherton discovers a new species of spider. The spider has a highly toxic venom. One spider bites Jerry and the man dies. His body is sent back to the small town of Canema, California, but no one realizes one of the spiders has crawled into Jerry's coffin. Once stateside, the spider mates with a common house spider, creating a brood of tiny, deadly, eight-legged monsters. The spider isn't the only new resident of Canema. Also new in town is the Jennings family. Patriarch Ross, played by Jeff Daniels, is a general practitioner who came to town to get away from the big city life. He brought with him his wife Molly, played by Harley Jane Kozak, and their son and daughter. Soon after Ross sets up his medical practice, people in the town start to die. Ross suspects something weird about the deaths, but the old, established town doctor dismisses Ross's concerns. Then that old doctor himself dies after being bitten by one of the spiders. Ross examines all the dead bodies and finds each of them have a recent spider bite. Out of his element, Ross calls Atherton, as Atherton is a known expert. Atherton doesn't go himself, but sends his assistant, Chris Collins, played by Brian McNamara. Chris soon confirms Ross's suspicions and catches one of the spiders. This is very hard for Ross, who suffers from severe arachnophobia, a paralyzing fear of spiders. Also brought in is local exterminator Delbert, played by John Goodman, who sprays several of the spiders, not knowing of their deadly bite. Atherton comes to town and examines the arachnid. He says that these spiders are sexless drones, but that there is a fertile male spider, the one from Venezuela, and then a queen spider with a sack full of eggs. This sack could produce more fertile male spiders and cause a massive infestation of the deadly creatures. The group realize the nest is in Ross's barn. Atherton goes to destroy the nest, but he's bitten and dies. Delbert then comes and destroys that nest. But Ross gets trapped in his basement, where it's discovered another nest is hiding. Ross has to fight off attacks from the lead male spider and eventually kills that spider and sets the nest on fire. We then see Ross and his family moved back to San Francisco, preferring big city life to bug city small town, and credits roll. And as we get started with this film, we have kind of an extended prologue. I remembered this happened, but I didn't realize we spent so much time in Venezuela at the very top of this, getting to know Julian Sands and this photographer, Jerry Manley, played by Mark Taylor.
Yeah, you know, we talk about Amblin Entertainment being involved, Spielberg, we talk about Jaws. This feels very indie to me, like as they go down and Manley's getting caught in spider webs, even the score, like it, like if you don't know what this film is and you just walk into this, you're expecting like some kind of explorer spider film in the jungle.
Yeah, I want to underline that Frank Marshall is, I've already mentioned, Steven Spielberg's producer. He made all of the Indiana Jones films. That is sort of his bread and butter. And yeah, 10 years later, he's now saying, let me make a movie. So you are, I think, watching someone who has studied up close how Steven Spielberg works and has that frame of mind, you know, front of mind as he is telling this tale. You feel the Spielbergianness of this setup as we head into the jungle. You half expect Harrison Ford to come running out with an idol.
Yes.
Yeah, there's even one minor character here who reminds me so much in how he looks as one of those guides from the opening of Raiders that I had to look up. I'm like, is that the same actor even? And there weren't very many bonus features on the Blu-ray, but there was one where they went into detail about filming in Venezuela and filming where there hadn't been a film crew previously for a feature film and having to take helicopters, 5 helicopters each day, each way to get to where they were filming here. I think that Frank Marshall, because of his producing history, and he's a co-founder of Amblin Entertainment, the studio that made this film that was co-founded with Steven Spielberg. I think he was able to use some of that juice to spend the money to go shoot in Venezuela that maybe a different first-time director might not have been able to get, and they would have had to just film in California and pretend it was South America, maybe Mexico if they were lucky. But this adds a lot of production value. These opening scenes look really good. The rest of the film isn't going to look as good as it does down here.
Yeah, but you're talking about second unit stuff. When we actually get this team of scientists in front of a bunch of trees to collect specimens, we're on a back lot. There's no way that's on location.
No, they were on location.
There's no way. I don't believe that. I will actually say they're lying.
Okay, there is footage of Frank Marshall in the jungle.
Yeah, no, there are scenes where they are at waterfalls and walking around, but those are some fake trees. And all of this, it's actually a compliment to the movie that there's this artificial, stage-bound, kind of old-fashioned quality. I do not believe we're at the jungle. Let me put it this way. If they are actually at the Venezuela jungle when they're filming the scenes of the spiders coming down, they did a great job of making it look like a set.
I could buy the jungle stuff. Yeah, maybe when they're actually, I don't know, sending that pesticide up into the tree and everything falls down in those containers.
That's what I'm saying. Those fake webs, this all feels like a Hollywood movie from 50 years ago. And that's, again, I think part of the charm is that there's this old-fashioned... You know, Indy was a throwback. The Indiana Jones was an attempt to do serials from 30, 40 years before. This feels like, yeah, an old-fashioned movie.
But is this opening too slow? I feel like I'm overanalyzing it because it goes on for so long. Because I'm like, would an entomologist really be looking for new species by fumigating them and killing them and letting all the corpses just land in buckets? I mean, maybe. I'm not an entomologist. I don't know what they do, but I would think you'd want living specimens.
That's what we did for our science project. I remember I had to collect butterflies and we had kill jars.
True. I'll say this. In my memory, this was maybe a 5-minute intro. Like, Manly dies real quick. They get his body back to the States. But yeah, watching it this time as an adult, it did feel like it dragged a little bit. Like, you want to get to that family unit, our main characters, a little bit quicker.
I think, again, if it's arachnophobia, you want to start with the idea that this is going to be scary. You know, going into the jungle is scary. There is a lot of things. I mean, they point out that there's some ant crawling on this guy that could also kill him. The frogs can kill you. Everything can kill you in this jungle, so much so that the tour guide will point the way but won't actually go down into the canyon.
We talked about Cannibal Holocaust and Green Inferno. Like, those were on my mind. You could run into cannibals.
Okay. I wasn't thinking too much about that. But I do think that they're building up the idea that this unseen spider is a real threat. And they do a lot to disguise. We only see kind of legs and eyes poking out from behind branches. They want to imply, not unlike the shark in Jaws, of the threat without showing it fully. If you actually saw the thing, you just go, oh, it's a tarantula. They're building the mystery. It's a silhouette.
And I like that, and I'm glad they do it, because they use a lot of real spiders in this film, but the lead spider is, of course, not going to be one of them. And when it finally does show itself, much like Bruce the Shark in Jaws, it does not hold up to being seen on film.
It looks like a guy wearing a glove.
The more we imply about the big evil spider, the scarier the big evil spider is.
Yes.
Right. I actually think that it has a size problem. Later, when it gets to small town America and a crow gets it.
What, it's got to make love?
Well, no, even before that, a crow gets it and I can't even see the bird's flying. I can't even see it. Like, it's so small that you can't see that the crow is carrying it. So sometimes it seems to be big, but honestly, I don't think it's any bigger than a plate, right?
No, I think it's, yeah, about plate size, which is a huge fucking spider, but...
That's a big spider.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I don't want to roll up a newspaper and swat that, but I do think, I don't know, it's kind of weird to have a bug movie where they're not giant, right? When I think about all the killer animal movies, usually they big, right? Radiation made them oversized, supersized, and the fact that it's just a really big tarantula makes this feel modest.
Well, the inspiration for Frank Marshall on this was the birds. And I'd say that this big spider is about the size of a bird.
I was going to go with, you go with small, like, I got the Gremlins vibe off of this. You talk about Jaws, but like, when we get to this small town, we're going to learn about all the folks. You have these multiplying little creatures that cover you. It just felt more Gremlins to me than Jaws. But again, those are still bigger than the spider. But like, I guess that's the scary thing. It's so small. Like, it's weird that we're scared of bugs because they're tiny and we could step on them. But we have these phobias.
Mm-hmm. But this one particularly is the granddaddy. I guess they'll refer to it as the general. As the scientists are picking through the other ones that they find, they call them soldiers. So again, they're trying to imply a size, but I think this movie might have a size problem. I think it's hard to be afraid of a spider that small, honestly.
Well, if this movie was going for straight out fear, then I would agree with you. But because this is a horror comedy that's going to be very lighthearted, I don't think that's actually a problem. I think the swarming of the spiders works for me. I mean, also, I remember in the 80s being very scared about killer bees. And bees are small, but you'd hear about these swarms of killer bees that were going to come up and take over the nation.
Yeah, if you ever want to cover some killer bee movies, there's some good comedy there. The Swarm? Oh, yeah. I'm up for it.
So I don't think spiders being tiny is necessarily a problem, and that these have such venom. I mean, it is immediately driven home that these spiders are got lots of poison sacs on them, and one single bite to this photographer and he is a desiccated corpse.
Yeah, about 17 minutes in, they're driving his casket to Kanema? This is made up, right? That's not a real coastal town?
Well, it's based on a real coastal town that I lived in when I was young, Cambria, which is right by San Simeon, and if you've heard of Hearst Castle.
Oh, yeah.
It's a little town. If you've listened to our Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings review, I talked about how my dad was one of the screenwriters on that, and when he finally sued and got paid for it, he took us out of Santa Monica and rented a little bungalow, like, right on the beach in Cambria, and relived there for a few years, because he's like, I'm just going to write and become this great writer. Didn't work out. We had to move back to the city. Kind of like this film.
Yeah.
But this is a place I've returned to, like, over the years. Just this year, I took my family out there, so they had fun watching this film. They're like, oh, we know that gas station. We know that building. That's where that gift shop was. So, Kanema, I don't know why they gave that name is awful. It does not roll off the tongue. Mm-mm. But it's filmed in Cambria, which is a real central coast town in California.
Mm-hmm. I think they just wanted to create a fictional world. They wanted to make some kind of a small town. I don't even think they used the word California. It's just anywhere USA, right?
They say San Francisco, so I took that as this is supposed to be California as well, that they just moved a few hours away, which is true geography.
Right. As this giant South American, well, giant in air quotes, as this South American spider arrives at the barn, chases a dog and cat out of the pet gate, and again, this bird takes it to this new farm, we see our main character in parallel also arriving at this barn, Jeff Daniels. A weird choice for a leading man in any movie in 1990.
Yes.
I think when I knew who he was, it was mostly for kind of playing squares, right? If you saw Something Wild, Purple Rose of Cairo, Terms of Endearment, he tended to be sort of a empty suit, a guy that might be blandly handsome, but didn't have much substance.
Yeah, when I think about Jeff Daniels, the stuff I always think about him in is stuff in the 90s.
Dumb and Dumber.
This would be probably the first time that I paid attention to him. Yes, Dumb and Dumber is the go-to. We discussed him earlier this year when we reviewed Speed, but I think about him being in that film. But I do think he's an actor who can oscillate between drama and comedy very well. You wouldn't think that the guy from Dumb and Dumber could actually play straight in a dramatic role, but I thought he did very well back when I saw Gods and Generals years ago.
Jeff Daniels, my point being, not a leading man that audiences would expect to see, which again may have contributed to the smaller than expected box office. He is an everyman. He's kind of uptight. My question for you, in watching it then and now, is why is he here? Why did he move to this town? It seems like it's created incredible financial stress. His wife has quit her office job and her success so that he could attend to patients in the middle of nowhere that he has no relation to and that don't seem to like him.
Well, it does feel like they very much downplay the wife having a career. They mention that she used to be in finance, but that he, in a very old-fashioned way, he's the bread earner and he's the man of the house who's going to provide, and it's his stress he was trying to get away from. They wanted to get away from the stress of the city, and he had come here, he had made an arrangement with the doctor there that doctor would retire and he would take over being general practitioner for the entire town, so he'd still have a good income as a doctor in this town. He wasn't going to set up a new practice.
He didn't want to live in a big city.
No, he wanted to relax.
Okay, so without really having any connection to this community, he thought this would be a simpler way of life. And he's kind of urban phobic then. On top of being scared of spiders, he doesn't want to be around a lot of people. And I don't know, just kind of a weird characterization. I can't imagine just moving to a place I'd never been to before and having no connection to anyone around me and expecting to be successful.
And this would probably be a huge political issue if this came out now. Back then, I just thought it was funny that, yeah, like, the mom is the tough one and the daughter's the tough one. Like, they're the ones going after the spiders. He's kind of a wimp and, like, just scared of them and just cares about that wine, that chateau he has in the truck.
Right. The son comes running because he's seen a spider. We think it's probably the South American spider by the way he's reacting. But in fact, it's just this little daddy long legs that's on a toy car. And yes, mom is the one that has to get the tissue, take it to the barn, where it is going to meet that South American spider and make love.
Yeah, just think, if she hadn't been so kind to that spider, there wouldn't be a movie here.
I know we see a moment of, like, legs, like, caressing each other.
They're kissing.
But I don't know how this works. And maybe I don't want to. Maybe that is too scary.
Yeah, usually it's like jellies involved with these insects egg sacs. And it's not like that porn you watch on Pornhub. Or maybe it is. I don't know what people watch.
Yeah, I'm not watching that porn. I can tell you that.
Okay, before mating, the male spider creates a sperm web and deposits sperm on it. Mm-hmm. He then draws the sperm into his body and inserts one petaplap into the female's genital opening and pumps in sperm.
Okay. All right.
He spits it out and then sucks it in and then spits it out in her. Like, weird spiders.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm glad that got cut from the film.
You know, I'm not a matchmaker, but I just can't imagine these two getting it on. Like, this tiny little spider and this giant tarantula.
Yeah, but if this is a horror comedy, like, this was funny. When I was watching this with my family, like, we're laughing, going, oh, look, they're kissing, they're falling in love. Like, yeah. It is a comedy moment.
It's silly. It's very silly. And done in parallel, as they're getting it on, Jeff Daniels and his wife is getting on. They're really drawing and contrasting the fact that they're both outsiders that have come to this community. And both will destroy it, I suppose, is the way of looking at it. It's very disappointing when Jeff Daniels realizes, yes, the man that was going to hand him his practice is not going to retire anymore. Does not want to be one of those folks that without purpose dies 6 months after hanging up his hat.
And this is what I'm talking about with, like, with Gremlins. He's, this doctor is like the bank teller that's always mad at Billy. Like, you got to have that flavor in this small town because people are going to die. And sometimes you want to enjoy that, at least in a horror film.
And also, much like Gremlins, I feel like this entire film is full of character actors that I know their face, but I have to look up where I know them from. And this doctor is definitely one of those. I knew his face, but when I looked up the films I've seen him in, I don't remember who he played. I think I might remember him in 9 to 5, but that would be about it. But there's just so many character actors that populate this town, and I know most of them. And it does provide a good feeling to have familiar faces everywhere.
Dialing into that, the good feeling you're having is watching what? People you like, people you want to see die, people who amuse you. What are we to feel about the population of Canaima?
I'm going to say I'm amused. Like, these, you know, not to be mean to the country folks, but they feel a little country bumpkin. Like, you know, they have a lot of jokes at the expense of that football coach and everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm just having a good time. Like, I'm enjoying these odd country folks as we go around to the parties and everything. Like, I'm not scared. Maybe that's a problem for some in arachnophobia, but at this point, I'm just enjoying meeting the town folks, having some chuckles.
That's right where I am. I like this town is what it is.
Okay, I'm wanting to move away. Like, I feel like it's a bad match. I feel like Jeff Daniels, yes, by being robbed of the job, it feels like he is without purpose and, yeah, no connection. And I feel like that remains. This movie ends up, for all of its side characters, being mostly about him. And that is kind of a surprise that this is not an ensemble. I guess in the Jaws tradition, he is Roy Scheider.
He's the one with the arachnophobia. He's the one that's got to get over it.
Right. And in the same way that Roy Scheider felt guilty about letting a child die and needing to atone, he, as a baby, had a stare down with an arachnid and has now got to have some kind of exposure therapy where he can get over that fear. This is the story of one man getting over his fear of spiders, even though it's kind of billed as a small town satire, maybe?
Again, I don't know that I'd even use satire so much as just that's the setting. I don't feel like it's lambasting small town life, nor is it glorifying it. It's just showing the differences of the fish out of water comedy of the San Francisco doctor adjusting to small town.
Yeah, and I don't think he does. I mean, I guess that's, again, the thing that I'm vibing about here and bumping up against. It feels like a family that, I guess the kids do play with the coach's kids. There's, or at least the daughter does.
They play with Bunny, yes.
It feels like they never integrate. And yeah, when we meet characters, they're mostly here to get whacked, starting with Margaret Hollins, the only woman that's ready to jump ship right away and say, new doctor in town, I want to be with him. But too healthy to be much of a income for this doctor. Yeah, that you can see his disappointment.
He even takes her off the medication.
Yes, yeah, exactly. I can't even prescribe you medication. You're over-medicated. Your doctor was wrong to say that you needed high blood pressure pills.
And it does take a while to get to this first in-town kill. You know, we have that one up top. I thought it took a little while to get to. But we're going to spend quite a bit of time with these in-town machinations of Jeff Daniels, Ross, going and talking to the doctor, and the doctor being like, if my wife can't get me to retire, you certainly can't, and them moving into the new house and finding that house spider and things. And so by the time we get to Margaret Hollins getting bitten as she's turning off a lamp, it's like, I'm kind of ready for the infestation, and we're just getting one spider out there.
This is first-time director problems, right? The fact that the pace is so pokey is the fact that this director kind of doesn't know what he's doing yet. Knows how he wants the movie to feel, knows that he's going for that Spielbergian small-town wonderment touch, but is just not experienced enough about, you know, getting to it. And so I definitely feel like, yeah, this movie is too loose. And yes, if we aren't really to have much of an opinion about this town, and it's just, you know, about death, then yeah, we should have had Margaret get it within 20 minutes.
Well, you say first-time director problems. Frank Marshall, great producer, iffy director. I've seen 3 of his 4 features. Arachnophobia, Alive, and Congo. And of those 3, Alive is probably my favorite. That's about the rugby players who crashed in the Andes and had to resort to cannibalism in order to stay alive. That one has some good suspense. Congo is like a guilty pleasure movie of my wife's, and so I've seen Congo more than I would like to count. But I see a lot of similarities in Congo and Arachnophobia, sadly. I see a lot of the pacing issues of Arachnophobia in Congo. Mm-hmm. They actually have a Venn diagram of cast members and supporting roles that were in Arachnophobia and come back for Congo. And so even on his 3rd time out, I'm not sure that Frank Marshall learned a lot of lessons out of this movie.
And while I'm enjoying this, I can recognize it could use some tightening up. Like, yeah, it dawdles at times and just like, let's get to the point. Like, there's definitely those problems, but I'm enjoying it more than I'm noticing those problems.
Okay, and I'm not here to piss on, well, maybe I am. Yes, I actually think it's my job to piss on films people enjoy. But I do think that thinking about Spielberg, thinking about Jaws, he just has a natural gift, right? Nobody knew who Roy Scheider was, but you really connected with him very, very quickly. The way he played with his son, the way that he was pained in the moment that the kid got eaten, like you were sucked into his plight. And here, I don't know. I never would say that there's a character that grabs me. I focus mostly on Daniels because in most of the scenes, he's the focus. But for all of the people that come in and out of here, and I'm going to argue there's some characters that we never really need. The sheriff, for example, that wants to, you know, kick the Yale doctor out of here, goes nowhere. And I do feel like a director that knows actors and a director that knows that every character can add something would have helped this movie.
But yeah, we do have this first death, and the old doctor thinks it was just a heart issue, hypertension, and kind of blames Ross because Ross took her off the medicine. And so we've got to have a second death. And the second one's going to happen to a young person. They had the doctor out to check for hernias on the entire football team. And so he happened to be watching when this one player gets tackled and doesn't get back up. And nobody notices there was a spider in his football helmet.
Right. In both cases, the audience knows. It's not a mystery why these people are dying. It's a comedy of errors that the spider is always crawling away as people are taking notice of the corpse. This woman was alone when she reached for her lamp switch and the spider comes down. This kid was ready to hop onto the football field and he put on a helmet where a spider had just climbed in. I guess you're right. The terror is these things are so small that they can just sneak up on you. You won't notice that they are, you know, at your feet, at your hand. And they don't leave big enough bites that anyone is to notice.
Well, I think part of the problem is this old Dr. Metcalf, who's like heart attack. I don't know how like a faulty hernia check leads, like you associate that with him, like missing some diagnosis that's going to have him die on the football field. But like that is part of, I think, the small town strife that kind of goes away. Ross, Jeff Daniels' character, has this argument with Metcalf after Margaret dies. And he's like, well, I'm up on the medical journals and you're not because you're doing everything the old fashioned way. Like they, again, that urban versus rural, you know, new versus old. They keep having those clashes. Yeah, a comedy of errors, which is not leading them to do proper autopsies to find the causes of these deaths. Because they're going to look for those bites later and find them all.
And I feel contempt towards the small townness, all right?
I mean, just for that sheriff.
I mean, that is what I'm getting, is that this man doesn't even know what an autopsy is. The sheriff, I feel like the undertaker. I feel like most of these people are kind of contemptible. I mean, even the coach feels a little bit annoying. Maybe it's just stereotypical, but I feel like if the intent was for us to fall in love with this town, I don't.
I don't think so. I think we're supposed to be scared of it and associate spiders with it. I don't think we're supposed to love these people.
Okay.
No, the movie I kept thinking about that came out around the same time as this, and it's just, there are some parallels between them, is Doc Hollywood. And I don't know if either of you have seen Doc Hollywood. Cars is kind of the animated version of Doc Hollywood.
Only once when it came out. I don't remember it.
Michael J. Fox outside of Back to the Future, not a good idea.
Yeah.
Tell that to the Frighteners, thank you.
Nah, I wasn't in love with it, but...
But it's a big city doctor who goes to a small town, but in the case of Doc Hollywood, he's brought around. The old doctor may not be up on the medical journals, but he knows his things from having been around. And the small town wins him over as he learns the new way to do things. And so this town is full of lovable rascals. Arachnophobia doesn't do that. At no point are we told this small town is a better way of doing things than the big city. And in fact, at the end of the movie, he's like, fuck this, I'm going back to the city.
That's why I didn't really track that he ever wanted to be here, that he ever saw. He wanted a wine cellar, but I don't really get the sense that he wanted to be a part of this community.
Yeah, and it was his idea to move there. So I can see why you think this town is a bit contemptible, because the movie never tells us the townies no more. Ross from the big city is always a step ahead of them. He's the one always calling for the autopsies, and all the townies are fighting against him. I do think the fact that I know these people, like Stuart Penkin, who's the sheriff, was on a lot of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And so I know that face. And so I don't dislike him as much as perhaps I should dislike that character.
The only one I like, and it's one that they obviously play up for us to fall in love, is John Goodman. About 48 minutes into this movie, they think that there are termites in the basement because the wood is all rotten. It's kind of a weird subplot setting up the climax of this film. So they call in this goofball who, you know, his name is Delbert McClintock. And, you know, he seems to have his own sort of Mickey Mousing score when he arrives. And, you know, just everything about him it tells you that comedy has fully arrived into the picture. He is meant to lighten whatever phobia you might have been feeling.
And in 1990, I'm so the opposite of Arnie. Like, I'm watching Roseanne, I'm laughing, I'm having a good time with that show. I see the trailer for this, and I'm like, oh man, that looks like a great John Goodman comedy. Like, I could not wait for him to show up in this, and then was like so disappointed. Like, he's barely in this. But like, that was my draw as a young teenager, was, oh, John Goodman, like doing funny, almost Ghostbuster-esque stuff with like big tanks of poison on him.
Yeah, is he the Robert Shaw? I'm not sure how to make a Jaws equivalent, but it does feel, I gotta agree with Jacob here. My memory was, I really liked him when I saw this on Pretty Woman Night back in the 90s. And I'm thinking he was a huge part of this movie. He really only has this early scene, which is a nothing scene.
Two scenes. Yeah.
He ends up saying there's no termites here and walking away, but they just want you to get to know him. They don't utilize him. He doesn't really ever become that important. He has one moment where he kind of goes gunslinger on a Daddy Long Legs. But for the most part, I feel like John Goodman maybe could have been the star of this movie. Better choice than Jeff Daniels.
Or at least make it like a buddy team-up movie with the two of them running around, like, in the picture the whole time.
Yeah, like a Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but unfortunately, if you say Blues Brothers and John Goodman, you make me think Blues Brothers 2000, and well, immediately I'm back hating John Goodman. So... And that's the thing is, when I was writing the plot summary, I got to the end and I'm like, wait, I never brought up John Goodman. He is such an irrelevant character to this movie. He's playing a very funny type of character, but there's no characterization there. You're either going to like the shtick he's doing or you're not.
He's doing like a funny lisp and that's it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. It's very big.
It is. And I got to say, the scariest thing for me in this entire movie, though, is when he goes to the basement and is like, you don't have termites. You have bad wood.
You're a homeowner. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, my God, you just put down a down payment on this house. And now you have to completely rip out its structure and replace the entire foundation. That is scary, sir.
And again, I ask, why did they buy this? Why did they move here? They weren't dreams of farmers. The wife had to give up her career. She's now taking pictures of webs in the barn. It really seems like the kids. I mean, isn't it really weird that the kids don't play a factor in all of this? This feels like a family movie. They have one moment where the daughter goes off to hang with the neighbors and they're scaring each other with Itsy Bitsy Spider, and the spider, you know, gets crushed by the book. I don't know. It just seems to me Spielberg has a gift for this. You find a way to make kids important in the story.
I forgot there was a son. Mm. You know, they focus on the daughter and that sleepover and things. And these kids, yeah, they're running around in the climax of the film, but they never matter in the film. And, you know, you mentioned Jaws, and yes, the kids there didn't really matter, but they at least had a couple of good moments with their dad.
Absolutely.
In the film. And here, we don't get that. And then, if you think about some of even the 80s Spielberg stuff that would focus so much on the kid, arachnophobia, fear of these tiny spiders, might work a lot better from a child's point of view.
Absolutely. We needed the Goonies to be on this adventure. To have Jeff Daniels be the star of a kid's film is weird. It's just weird. And it just lets you know that Frank Marshall, however closely he might work with Steven Spielberg, hasn't figured out the formula.
But I'm not having a bad time here. You know, I really think that there is a lot of good stuff going on. I, first of all, am laughing at the way some of the spiders get dispatched, like at that Itsy Bitsy Spider scene you mentioned. And I'm wondering, you know, to go back to our Cannibal Holocaust review, I'm like, are they really killing spiders? Because they're using real spiders here.
That was my question for you, because, yeah, like, I don't think you could do that, even in 90.
No, there's no way. There would have been an animal rights activist group shutting this movie down.
Yeah.
You know, again, there's not a lot of bonus features. What I did find out is that these are spiders from New Zealand to be big enough. And I saw some behind the scenes stuff where they were using like hair dryers and things to get them to go where they wanted them to go and move how they wanted them to move. But when you see a spider and a book is dropped on top of it and then a foot steps on that book, I'm like, that spider dead.
Yeah. And again, I imagine, you know, there is sort of like, oh my gosh, it's dropping down on its web to get her. There is a little bit of tension to all of that. But again, this movie is very quick to allay any fear you might have. Any phobia will quickly turn into a joke. I don't think there's really many scenes other than the opening in the Amazon where a spider bite is played purely for terror.
I mean, this is how I look at it. You go to a haunted house as a child, it may be scary. When I went to Haunted Mansion, like 7 for the first time, I couldn't open my eyes. They had to be shut the whole time. I go on that now as an adult. I'm kind of chuckling because it's just campy and goofy. And I don't know. That's how this works for me. If you're younger, I think the tension is there to be a scary moment for younger audiences or those with arachnophobia. And for me, it's like, yes, it's almost like a 50s horror movie. It's so campy and the way it's dropped down, but yeah, I'm like, it's quaint. It's doing what it needs to do.
Quaint is a great word. That's how I'm experiencing it. And I might sound overly harsh, but I'm recognizing why this movie didn't have the impact of a Jaws. It's because it is mostly a family film whose scares are quaint and whose director is not skilled enough to make us love these characters. It just ends up being sort of a nice vibe, but not a particularly compelling story. We don't really get into it until the third death, when Metcalf, who's become sort of this villain because he's the doctor that won't retire, he's afraid of dying, so ha ha ha, we know when he's on the treadmill and the spider is climbing into his slipper, this is his time to exit the picture. It now becomes necessary to exhume the bodies, find the bites, do the toxicology that's going to show that he has a very lethal poison in his bloodstream, and we can finally get Julian Sands back into the movie.
Yeah, and that doctor, we finally have somebody who has a witness to the death, because the other two people, nobody knew there was a spider. Here, the doctor says to his wife, a spider bit me, and then he falls over and dies, so that sort of is the smoking gun. And again, in looking at these character actors, this one was the one I knew instantly. The wife of the doctor, the actress is Frances Bay. Grandma Gilmore from Happy Gilmore. I mean, just instantly right there.
I think of Blue Velvet, but, you know, to each their own.
I pretty much guarantee more people have seen Happy Gilmore than Blue Velvet.
Sure.
Now, that could be seen as a good thing or a bad thing, but I think that more people have seen Happy Gilmore.
And perhaps. I have not. I know this actress mostly for working with David Lynch.
Yeah, she was in Fire Walk With Me also, but she's going to be the one who witnesses the spider bite. And because this doctor was kind of an obstructionist, now they introduce another character that I can't quite figure out who he is. He's wearing a bolo tie, the one who gives Ross the permission to exhume the bodies.
The coroner.
Oh, that is the coroner.
Yeah, the coroner is the, you know, he's the local guy that does autopsies. He rolls in and he has the authority. Yeah, why have this character? Again, it's so weird. That's what I mean about this cast. It's so weird they keep expanding when this could just be the sheriff, who doesn't have much part in this. Why not just have the sheriff be more of a role? Why, when they call for Julian Sands, do they send this guy Chris? It just is strange that we don't get this pared down to like three people and versus the spiders. It just seems like most of this cast doesn't make an impression, so why make it large?
I think that would make more sense if during the climax, you had multiple things going on where you gotta defeat the spiders at this house and rescue people from spiders here. Like, they've spread all over the town. That's when you would use this big ensemble. But no, the climax is just gonna be Jeff Daniels fighting some spiders in the basement. Sorry, cellar.
I agree. Some character consolidation would go a long way in this movie, because the sheriff is still against the exhuming of the bodies, even though the coroner has approved it. And then, yeah, this assistant who goes in place of Atherton. I mean, I like the character. He's going to stick around to most of the climax, but yeah, they could have carved this down quite a bit and helped the impact, because like this coach, when you mentioned the sleepover with the spiders and things, there's the coach there and he's not really fleshed out as a character, but he's the father of this little girl. He's also the father of a teenage girl who's going to see a spider in the shower and start shrieking, and they'll give Delbert another scene to go over and start spraying their bathroom.
But instead he just steps on the spider because it's immune to the poison.
Yeah, this is the good stuff of this movie. I mean, I do think that what you want to see is like, yeah, let's see Psycho, but with a tiny little spider instead of mother coming at this girl. Like, yeah, it's just, it's that goofy sort of ironic sense of humor. Again, the nostalgic that, yeah, makes it silly fun. I don't think that this movie is scary. Not as an adult, not watching it now. I don't think you're going to have a moment where any of this gets to you, but I do think it has tongue-in-cheek humor.
I'll say there is one moment towards the end, that jump scare that got my family, but otherwise, no, there wasn't a lot of screeching going on as we watched this.
I wish they'd played up the grotesqueness of spiders. You know, if this movie's arachnophobia, do what happened to Brent. Make us scared of the spider. And I feel like that because we're always just seeing them scurry, you know, you could have gotten a macro lens, given us some close-ups of the grotesque hair on the spider body, give us some shots of the spider eyes and how alien they really look. There could have been ways to really make this feel more menacing, but it's a very tricky balance with a horror comedy, and so many just don't get that mix right. And because they're keeping this lighthearted and very family-friendly, I feel like they're not even going for real scares.
And yet this is PG-13.
Maybe they spent too much of their budget in Venezuela, because, yeah, get those close-ups that you're talking about. I expected that, and I think maybe that's costly to get special lenses, and you're dealing with animal wrangling, which is always a nightmare, but, like, that's what you want if you're calling this a scary movie about spiders.
You get close-ups. Guys, they're there, yeah. But it's comedy. Again, it's the idea that it, like, sees John Goodman coming and does a spit take, and then tries to move out of the way.
Well, my daughters are like clapping, go, oh, that spider's such a good actor. Like, yes, they are not scared. They are impressed with the spider antics, though. Like, they love that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know what? I want to really call that out. The spider work here is so good. You know, if they were going to do that today, it would all be CGI spiders, and they'd do exactly what you want, and there would be nothing impressive about it. But here, the fact is, I'm dumbfounded at how they got the spiders to do everything they wanted them to do and go where they want them to go. And there was one scene where they're waiting for a spider to come inside a doorway where I'm like, that's probably two or three beats longer than they wanted because it took a moment to get the spider to go. But by and large, this is really good spider work going on here. And you can feel that. I mean, I never question the physicality of the spiders.
Except for the big one.
But are they scary? I would argue they're cute. A lot of this is mugging. And again, I feel like with the score and with the tone and all of that, this movie is always very, very quick. Again, bad title for so many reasons, but this one is not really trying to scare you. Or rather, it's so worried that it'll scare you that it's always telling jokes.
Yeah, I don't feel, again, there's some jump scares at the end with spiders popping out, but I don't feel this movie gets really scary until then. And then you get lots of like danger because there's so many spiders, but yeah, all of this stuff, I said it before, it's quaint. Like, I'm like, yeah, they're doing those beats they need to do. They're not very scary unless you're maybe young.
And even though we have the idea that the spiders could pop up everywhere, I don't really have a good sense about the layout of this town, but you know, they make the point that the crickets stop making noise, that Jeff Daniels is working late at night, a cricket has a jump scare moment with him, and then he's like, yeah, where are all the other ones? This guy's running scared. I like that moment. I also like that moment where he thinks he sees a big spider on the wall and it just ends up being like a trick of the eye late at night, you know. It's like a coat hook or something like that. It just looks like it has eight legs. The idea that there's something ominous that he's trying to figure out, that this town is full of it, would imply that, yes, this end would be a bloodbath, that everyone in town would be impacted. But for all of these characters, I feel like most of them are left alive and few of them have moments with the spider.
Agreed again. I think that, honestly, the body count should be higher. Mm-hmm. The girl in the shower has the spider coming for her. She's fine. The dad of that girl goes to use the bathroom and there's spiders in the toilet bowl. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh God, you know, I'm wincing at the thought of the spider bite on your balls. And he is called away from the toilet before the spiders can get him. And when somebody does die by the spiders, I mean, they just kind of flop, you know, there's nothing gory or grotesque or scary about that method of death. The next two to die are the fat undertaker and his wife, who are eating popcorn. They've been the butt of some fat jokes earlier. They were taking all the food away from a party and things in to-go bags, and they're going to reach for some popcorn and be killed, and so what? You know, it's just, it's not scary, and it's not fast-paced enough. for me to feel like there's imminent danger everywhere.
First movie director problems. I would just argue Frank Marshall just doesn't know how to do it yet. He thinks he does. He's giving it a try. It's an imitation of a master. And as such, again, you just keep wishing that, yes, someone else was at the helm of this. But again, I want to point out contempt, right? Yes, these people were greedy and they die by eating popcorn. It's again, there seems to be a judgment about this town. I feel like Frank Marshall doesn't like small town America. I just sense it. I feel it. I feel that's why it's a happy ending that this family will get out of here. They never integrated and then they were wrong to ever try. But we're at the end. It should be said that Julian Sands finally decides, okay, I'll be in the film.
Like he had anything better to do. I mean, this is Julian Sands we're talking about here. I mean, I've seen him in a lot of stuff, but come on, you could have just had him be in the rest of the film.
Again, why send Chris? It should be three people, just like Jaws. You know, you have John Goodman, you have Jeff Daniels, you have this guy who's got the science knowledge. He can drop all this stuff about the queen, the soldiers, all of the stuff that's important for us to understand that, you know, they've got to kill the egg sac before it hatches. That up to this point, the killer spiders can't mate, can't duplicate, will die off, are being found shriveled up in cereal boxes. So it's not really apocalyptic until that egg sac hatches that's in the wine cellar. And we know it's there because we had a cutaway of the spiders dragging it there.
And I think the climax actually has suspense. When you get to the house, they realize, oh my God, it's my house at the center of where all the attacks have been. And Ross goes home and his wife and kids are there and the spiders are coming out of the keyhole and they're all over the place. And the thought of a single spider bite is all it takes to kill you. When they're finally swarming, and really up to now, you've had one spider here, one spider there. But now that they finally bring the spiders en masse, this actually is suspenseful for me. It's like, I know they're going to get out of it.
Yeah, the way they rise out of the sink and just, they're just flooding in. And that's kind of what you wanted this whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's taken too long. And yes, now that it's here, yes, it's one moment of Jeff Daniels and Chris trying to get his family out through the roof. And yes, wouldn't you know it, the guy that's most scared of spiders is trapped by them. The others get away and Julian Sands goes into the barn and he is killed by the general. It's for John Goodman to find his webbed up corpse.
And this is because Atherton was being egotistical. He was, I think, trying to capture the lead spider. He's like calling the spider. He's plucking the web. Mm-hmm. He isn't just there to kill. He's still got this. He's the Dr. Frankenstein. He created the situation. He's the one who was studying the spiders and wanted the live spider. He couldn't deal with the dead spiders.
But it's not his spider that got away. I mean, that spider, for whatever reason, made the choice to get into the casket. He didn't.
It was a castaway.
Yeah. I guess you could say that he went into the jungle and, you know, fumigated the spider's home.
I mean, there is some hubris with the way he fumigates that and makes all the bugs fall down. Like, I didn't like the guy in that moment.
No, Julian Sands is pretty unlikable, always. So, yeah I agree.
Yeah, true. I never really liked him in this.
Mm-mm. No.
And I don't think you're supposed to, though.
Yeah, I agree. They're trying to, I guess people get what they deserve. I guess that's the way that I'm seeing most of this. Most of the people that die here, an arrogant doctor that picked on the doctor and wouldn't retire that we liked, you know, he dies. We have, the gluttonous undertaker. I guess the only one that was nice was Margaret right at the beginning, right?
The football player didn't deserve to die.
No, that's true, too.
Yeah.
But I just see the fact that Atherton here gets it from the lead spider as being very much what he deserves because he is the root of all this. He may not have intended for this to happen, but his studies, his fumigation, the photojournalist featuring him and his ego, you get the impression he's very egotistical. He doesn't have time to go to the small town. That's why he sends Collins instead of going on his own. And so I feel like his death is the most deserved of the film, and that's why it's the first time we see the Big Daddy give it a kill.
And we're really seeing that spider by this point. I do think that this is where we're finally seeing as much of it as we're going to. I still think they do a lot to cut away. There's a spider POV camera. And, you know, they know that it's not really that scary. So they have to do what they can to make it seem bigger, loom large.
I think it's in the climax where it's facing off against Ross that it's finally shown fully. Here we still get some shots of its legs crawling over stuff, but we don't get the full glory shot reveal. But it feels like puppet work.
Oh, no. And it, like, stands up and, like, hisses and shows all its legs. I'm like, that's just a dude wearing, like, a baseball glove, like, flipping it up and, like, showing that puppet he's got on his hand.
Yep, it is really not scary and kind of funny.
Yeah, hissing. They do try to do that. They do try to give it.
Yes, it hisses.
Yes, all of the spiders here, like, right before they attack you.
But it's up to Delbert. Delbert is going to find Atherton's dead body, and Delbert kills a nest. I mean, he gets something to do. It's not very exciting, though. It's not like there's any tension or suspense. He just finds the dead body and then easily takes care of that nest. All of the suspense, all of the tension is saved for Ross, who he gets his family out of the house through the roof. I wasn't quite sure what their thought process was. The front door is swarming with spiders.
They're like, we have to go upstairs in the bathroom. Is that the only other window in the house?
Yeah, I'm like, is there not a back door? Is there not another way? But he gets them out. But because of all the rotten wood in the house, he crashes from the second floor into the basement and is fine. He's not, no broken bones, no death.
The wood was rotten. It must not have hurt that much to fall through.
Yeah, I think they wanted to have a water spout, right? You know, they've done so much with Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Yes.
That he's going to be poking around in these pipes and all of that. It just sort of adds to the irony of the nursery rhyme and the fact that he is regressing. He is now becoming his infant self. At one point, I think it's the queen that makes him paralyzed, or maybe it's the general that sort of comes at him and he has to relive his childhood trauma. He can't move.
This is fun stuff for me, though, that he, when he's kind of trapped underneath the wine racks and throwing the bottles of wine at the general, and then he's like, oh no, not this bottle, and chooses different bottles. I'm having a lot of fun. It took a long time to get here, but I'm really enjoying the climax of this movie.
Yeah, I learned a very bad thing from this movie, guys. I didn't know you can make flamethrowers really easily with just some aerosol and a lighter.
Mm.
You didn't know that?
I did not know this. And I was a Boy Scout. They taught us the wrong stuff in Boy Scouts. But I asked my mom, I'm like, is that a real thing? Can you do that? She's like, yes. I don't know why she told me that was a real thing, because then I went and did it all the time.
Right. Wrong answer.
Okay, you're saying you didn't know this when you were a kid and saw this. You know this now.
When I was a kid and saw this the first time, yeah.
I thought you were saying you just realized this yesterday.
No. In 1990, I did not know this was a thing.
Yeah, and that's good. Again, maybe that's yes. the 13 on this rating, the PG-13.
I didn't even tell that story because I didn't want my girls to get ideas from it. I didn't want them to hone in on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe that would have been, if you had had this be the Goonies versus the spiders and had kids doing all of this stuff, maybe, I don't know, would that have been a bad influence? To me, that still feels like the movie they should have made. It really does feel like it should have been about these Jennings children in this moment, and so much about this middle-aged doctor, his problems, I don't think they're that relatable.
Agreed with that.
But I've always remembered this last shot of the film, of the climax here, where he uses the nail gun to shoot the general.
Oh, yeah.
And the general is this flaming spider that goes right into the egg sack, and the egg sack catches fire. I haven't seen this film in 34 years, but I remembered that shot so vividly. I think that's really well done stuff.
Well, I mean, it's Chekhov's nail gun. I mean, a lot of the setup that's happening here, they underline a lot. Again, first timer kind of syndrome. Like, oh, this storm door needs a padlock. Well, of course, that means in the climax, he can't get out of the basement. You know, it was set up. It was there. And I do appreciate it, but it's very broad. That's what I want to underline. It's not like this is super clever stuff. What you're talking about is base thrills. It's really obvious and fun because it's nostalgic, because it reminds you of being a kid and scared by this stuff.
But the funniest thing in this entire comedy movie to me is the epilogue. I remembered this movie so well, but I completely forgot that at the end of the movie, they left town and moved right back to San Francisco.
Yeah, no, I remembered all this.
And they have to deal with an earthquake, and they're like, still better than spiders.
Yeah, she's now the breadwinner. She's talking about the Christmas bonuses, the caffeine, the office politics. Setting up for a sequel, right? Obviously, a spider got in their suitcase, and they were hoping that next time it would be on the Golden Gate Bridge.
I don't think they had those kinds of thoughts. I think that they knew this was one and done.
No, no. They thought they had something. This is the first film launch of a whole new wing of Disney. They thought they had Jaws. I'm telling you. There was a lot of dismay that a Spielberg project kind of ended up being more Harry and the Hendersons, Batteries Not Included, than Gremlins. You know? I think that this was disappointing for the studio.
I wouldn't go that low, but... I see what you're saying.
You get my point.
I get your point.
You know, Spielberg had a lot of hits, and then he had the other stuff.
This is better than Batteries Not Included or Harry and the Hendersons. Easily.
Harry and the Hendersons is underrated. That movie has heart.
Oof. Oof. Okay.
Mm. Go watch it. Revisit it.
No, I won't. But I will say the funniest thing for me is that they got Jimmy Buffett to do this end song, Don't Bug Me. I didn't remember that. And I guess Nibbling on Sponge Cake, he is the kind of dude that would write a song about being attacked by spiders and still being casual about it.
Yeah, I think like you could probably get him to do any song, like just pay him and like he'll sing it all, be happy, and you'll want a margarita to it.
Mm-hmm.
But are you happy with Arachnophobia? Jacob Stewart, do you recommend it? Jacob.
I'm going to concede to Stewart that this is not Jaws. Stewart has laid out a great explanation why Jaws, Gremlins, works better than this. This is an imitator of those. Like, Jaws is like a 5-star movie, though. It doesn't need to be a 5-star movie to be recommendable. But I have this preface, so, like, I'm not saying this is the same thing as, like, Jaws and Gremlins. But it's in that same kind of family. It's the same vibe. The small towns with the monster or monsters, like, terrorizing the town folk. And, yeah, it's not Jaws. It's not Gremlins. It's not even Tremors. Like, those are all better. But, like, I think of this in that same vein. Like, it's closer to Tremors than Jaws. Like Tremors, I have a lot of fun watching that first one. I laugh a lot. They got some scary monsters. This is a step down from that. But if you want that kind of film, if you're looking for a family film, or you just like, you know, here's a quirky town with something terrorizing it, you're going to have a few laughs, some cheesy scares, maybe you'll have one or two good jump scares in it. Like, this film works. This, you know, again, it's October, it's Halloween. Like, I want a lot of times at this time of year, my horror to be like a roller coaster ride. Like it's fun. I don't want like gritty,
elevated,
gory. Oh, I don't want gritty and overly gory stuff. I don't want elevated horror in October. I want something that's just more fun. And like, I feel like that fits in this category. It's a roller coaster. It's not one you're suspended from. There's no loops in it. It's just like an old fashioned wooden roller coaster, but it's got its ups and downs. It's enjoyable. You're going to have a good time. You're going to have a smile on your face. It's got its bumps along the road, but yeah, it's a recommend.
Stuart.
I think it's a curious little animal. It's a high concept horror comedy that is often very clumsy in its attempts at laughs and scares, is what I would say. I basically experience it, I think, as you described, Jacob, as this family-friendly roller coaster, an attempt to make Jaws or maybe The Birds more relatable to all ages. And as such, it makes you wonder, what would this movie be like if Spielberg or Hitchcock actually was behind the camera? I can feel the difference. And it's hard not to feel a little ripped off that Frank Marshall just hasn't created a creature feature that has achieved its full potential. In so many ways, I see fixes for this where it could be more exciting, more funny, more scary, more human, more relatable, more Spielberg. I think the big mistake, honestly, is that they left out the kids. That this is a film, the target audience should be wee ones. They're the ones most scared of spiders. Seeing them triumph over it makes a whole lot more sense to me than some middle-aged doctor and all of these problems that just, yeah, frankly, I don't know why we spend that much time on such a boring dude. When this is sort of a kid's adventure and kind of a kiddie horror experience, maybe you could have made it around John Goodman. I also think that he is underserved and should have been a bigger part of this adventure as well. Jaws, as you've already stated, transcended being a B-movie and became this truly cinematic piece of art. And Arachnophobia is just perfectly happy to spin a B-movie tale. It doesn't have a whole lot of ambition, and it's not made particularly well. But I kind of agree with Jacob and with Jimmy Buffett. It doesn't bug me. It is fine. It is affable. It is enjoyable. It reminds me of being a kid. I was scared of spiders as a kid. I saw this movie as a kid. And so if you want to regress and be a kid again, I think it does a fairly good time travel trick on me. It's a mild recommend, but I also feel like there's a reason why it wasn't a blockbuster, why it didn't become the phenomenon of 1990, why it opened third. It just doesn't have the ambition or the artistry to be a great film.
And I pretty much agree. I mean, there's nothing to be afraid of when it comes to Arachnophobia. Afraid of older movies, afraid of scary movies, afraid of horror comedies. I say allay your fears and just watch what I'd call an enjoyable little romp. I think there's fun to be had with this movie, but it's mild fun. Some of the movie's funny, but never laugh out loud funny. Some of the ending gets suspenseful, but it never quickens my pulse. Some of the movie is a little bit gross if you are eked out by puppet spiders, but never anything extreme or offensive. And I think that's my problem with Arachnophobia, is I think it plays things too safe. It's just too middle of the road. It's very milquetoast. I'd have preferred the movie take some risks and really play up something. Be funnier, be scarier, be gorier. This is a film that I don't think takes any chances, and it doesn't leave much of a taste in my mouth when it's done. And that's my memory of it the first time, too, as I walked out and I was like, yeah, that was pretty good, and I never thought of it again. And that's where I'm at here, is this is a recommend. I like this movie, but I'm just never going to think of it again. I wish it was a movie I could love. It never reaches that height. But hey, it gets 3 recommends, even if they're all more mild recommends, so it did something right. And I did play the video game.
What?
What?
Arachnophobia the video game was released in 1991 for DOS and Commodore.
Oh, ouch. Real bad. Okay.
What? So they didn't care.
No, okay. No.
Who's playing Commodore?
Yeah, that's perfect for this movie. Yes, exactly. Oh, you're on Game Boy? You're on Sega? Nope. DOS.
I believe it did come out for a couple other platforms, but I played the DOS version. You are Dell going into houses around town and you're spraying bugs and you have bug bombs and you have to find the nest in each house and spray the spiders. And this game is atrocious. The controls suck. You can barely aim the gun. The sound effects, I mean, this is a 1991 game. There's no music. There's just ugly sound effects.
This is giving me flashbacks of Fester's Quest, if you ever played that.
Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Oh, no. Fester's Quest is so much better. So yeah. Much better than this game.
Wow.
But yet it does have a Fester's Quest feel in how Fester, you went through the town and went into the houses and things.
I wish that had been the movie, honestly. You're describing the movie I wanted to watch.
I agree. More John Goodman.
I found a YouTube playthrough because I wasn't going to beat this game. It was too difficult. And at the end, after you've gone through all the houses, Dell is recruited to go to South America and fight into the nest of the spiders and go down and finally take out the master nest.
There you go. That's the sequel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely have to go back to South America for the climax.
But it was an awful game to a decent movie. So you kept talking about the sequel. All I could think about was how bad that video game was. I don't think anybody remembers it because, you know, it's not emulated because it's on DOS. You know, I had to find an abandonware site to get it.
Oof.
But it would be so much easier if people who emulated old consoles were able to just play it. I think this game would be more remembered than it is.
And I got to ask, are the spiders any bigger? Or are you still like running from these tiny little things?
They're pretty big spiders. They can crawl on the ceiling and the ground.
Yes, exactly.
You only got like 16 bits. Yeah, they can't shrink them that small.
Right.
Yeah, if they were that small, you wouldn't even see them on the screen. You see two layers of the house at each time. It was a side scroller. It reminded me a little bit of Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
In that kind of perspective.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you had staircases you had to go up to get to the next level of the house, the way Moonwalker, you had the stairs to go up and go down. But recommend for Arachnophobia the movie. Strong not recommend. Don't bother looking up that game.
And I was just going to break out my Commodore 64.
So that's what we thought. Brent, what about you? What do you hear our reactions? Stuart is coming down very highly. This is not scary, but it frightened you. So what do you think?
I know. I feel so bad. He's making all these comments. I'm like, we have a dude that like has a lifelong anxiety because of this film on listening to us.
It's age, right? I mean, Brent, you were 8 years younger than I was when I saw this.
Don't squish me or dismiss me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, can we re-record the beginning again?
No, I'm afraid not. You're on record of being terrified of this movie.
I stand by it. It's fine. No, actually, I had a great time listening to you guys dissect this, and it made me laugh. It was a great show. But yeah, when I watched it last night, I saw a lot of the same things. The spiders just get me. It just, I think it's that ending.
Would you want it remade? Would you want to see them try it with CGI or try it now?
No. Arnie, you made a really great point, and I wanted to touch on that in the beginning, but the spider work is so good. I think that's why it's effective.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone that might close their eyes to a gruesome, creepy, crawly movie, this might get you more because it's not CGI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was great. It was a fun listen. I kind of disagree a little bit about John Goodman. I like that he's in it. He's almost like the Beetlejuice of the movie, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
I like that he's kind of in it he might be the best part of it, but I like that part.
I wanted more Beetlejuice, so we're on opposite ends on this.
And I agree about the kids. I think that's a strong point. I didn't think about that prior. And the spider guy, the guy that knows everything with the glass, he's like the Jeff Goldblum of the...
Mm-hmm. Chris.
I don't know why I like that guy, and I just wanted more of him. So I kind of like the trio, but there's a lot of comparisons to Jaws, and I can't help but agree with you there. But yeah, this is no Jaws. Nothing can be. Like you said, Jacob, it's a 5-star movie.
But you mentioned a remake, Stuart. There are talks of a remake.
Sure.
I haven't been able to find anything in the past year, but it looked like Frank Marshall and James Wan were going to be producing a new version.
No, not James Wan.
Directed by Christopher Landon.
Who is?
He did Happy Death Day, Happy Death Day to You, Freaky, and one of the Paranormal Activities we reviewed.
Okay, so it's still going to be funny then.
Yeah, they're going to try to retain the balance of horror and comedy. I think they can do it better, I'll be honest. I'm optimistic that this... I want it to be better. I like the movie well enough.
Yeah, sure.
But it's hard not to experience it as an imitator when it could have really been, I don't think it ever could have been Jaws, but it could have been The Birds.
Good point about The Birds. And Arnie, I did hear about that. James Wan wanted to remake this movie. I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah, agreed. We're not sure about his resume.
James Wan is very hit or miss in my mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He has some really good films out there, but his name being attached does not make me immediately start jumping up and down.
I would be more optimistic because of that director, even. I don't think I recommended those Happy Death Day ones, but I could see that tone working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked Freaky.
Freaky was funny.
It could definitely be as good or better. And I imagine, I'm just going to walk out on a limb here, they'll throw out this whole small town thing and they'll do it somewhere entirely differently. They'll have different characters. They'll just take the attitude that the South American spider winds up going somewhere and reinvent. And that could be good. Sorry, Jeff Daniels, but you don't need to be in it.
You hated him.
Yes, I guess hate is a strong word, but I really do wish he wasn't the focal character.
See, and I think that's something that maybe is different for me in this movie is And my sister and I, we watched it together growing up, and obviously I was the one who was scarred. But we liked him. We liked Jeff Daniels. I don't know what it was about him in this movie, but he resonated with us. Mm. But I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of like, why is he here?
Yes. Why so much of a middle-aged man with a spider problem?
He's got conviction.
I guess.
Well, thank you again, Brent, for picking this movie, and thanks to everyone listening to this podcast for your support. Glad you've been a patron with us this October, and for Halloween, hope you've enjoyed this and maybe rewatched this film. I know a lot of people do rewatches as we're reviewing stuff, so this is a good one for Halloween. Next month, we've got something completely different. I do love these patron podcasts because we can swing so wildly between genres, between types of films. We're going from Arachnophobia in October to Spartacus in November.
I am Spartacus. Yeah, and back to Kubrick. This is, I think, maybe...
The film I always forget is done by Kubrick.
Yes, I was going to say that. The one that I feel is the least Kubrick of all the Kubrick movies we've done. We covered most of his filmography in bits and pieces all over, sometimes in the Stephen King retrospective, sometimes by request. This one comes as a request from someone, I believe, who says it's their favorite movie. I don't remember it being my favorite movie, but I am always curious to come back to Kubrick and see what it's like. And this will be a whole part of, on the main feed, Gladiator films. We're going to cover 300, that sequel, Gladiator, and the new Gladiator 2. All is a companion piece to covering Spartacus, the original Gladiator film.
So we'll be doing that around Thanksgiving for patrons. So thank you all again for your support. Brent, thank you for joining us for this review. Stuart, Jacob, thank you for joining me. Until next time, goodbye crime, goodbye culture, goodbye friends.
Come on, honey. Party's over.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
Gave you a standing ovation when you arrived.
And a special thank you to Brett McKinney for his amazing support of Now Playing Podcast and for picking Arachnophobia for us to review.
Don't mention it.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Come on, we live in the country now. It's time to work through this irrational, paralyzing terror.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
It's more scared of us than we are of it.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
Chris, I'm scared to death.
Yeah, we all are.
Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
My, you've been busy.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024. And no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Rock and roll.
With noted entomologist James Atherton, played by Warlock's Julian Sands. I was certain if we ever discussed Julian Sands in this, that we'd be doing a Warlock retrospective. I can't believe we got to Julian and not Warlock. How'd that happen?
I'm fine skipping Warlock forever.
But I thought he did very well back when I saw Gods and Generals years ago.
Mm. Was that history class? I can't imagine you watching that movie. When did you ever care about Gettysburg?
I've seen Gettysburg in theaters and Gods and Generals and...
You're so complicated. All right. Anyway.
He's a Civil War buff.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we know how much Arnie loves history movies.
Assistant who goes in place of Atherton. Is his name Julian Sands?
That's the actor's name.
Okay.
You just want to call him Warlock, I know.
I just have Adrian Sands in my notes, so.
Oh.